All right. Well, the government's announced a couple of backdowns this week on the budget measures and on the NDIS, which we should mention as well. A bit of a change in how some of these people who are clearly eligible for some support are going to be calculated. But on the budget measures, look, substantial. The changes are substantial. I think what stays in place is the basic reforms themselves. The negative gearing, certainly nothing, no changes there. But on the capital gains tax concessions, the bedrock remains. But a significant change to have the eligibility or the exemptions go from businesses with $2 million in turnover to $10 million in turnover.
No, I actually disagree with that. I think it was a faux back down. I think they didn't offer any costings around it, which shows that it's negligible in terms of its impact on voters and those impacted by these changes to the tax concessions and so forth. The real test, though, will be, what it does to on the ground in terms of, voter support. I don't think voters are going to buy that. Those who are impacted by it, whether they have shareholdings or their children have shares as a form of savings instead of bank accounts, that's what's going to be, the most influential on the vote moving forward.
But the opposition coming from a small business was loud. It was quite visible.
And
they've done something about that. And how can they go any further? Like, I was just looking up some figures on this, and the fact is that when you're talking about Australian businesses, 62% of Australian businesses are sole traders. Mm. They're people who are just operating on their own. You go from $2 million turnover to $10 million turnover. So that takes you in a territory where businesses can employ between 40 and 50 people. Mm-hmm. They're not small businesses. That's medium-sized businesses. But that takes in 97 or 98% of all businesses. So for the business groups now to be saying that doesn't go far enough, what they're actually saying is exempt business altogether.
Yeah, but I think, again, this is the consistency that voters are looking for in their politicians and why they're drawn to someone who's seen to speak the truth. And we can debate whether or not, that's accurate or not, but that is where voters are at right now. And Albanese spent several years denying there was any intention to do this, saying there wasn't any need to do it, and then suddenly turns around and does it. And now that he's backing down, and I know I'm sounding like I'm contradicting myself, I think there's a danger now for him in being perceived to back down, because they're like, well, hang on, for 5 years you were telling me you didn't need to do it. Then suddenly, out of nowhere on the budget night, you said, oh, no, we do need to do it. And the reason is intergenerational inequity, which, by the way, has been existing for a decade or more. And then after a month of insisting you didn't need to make any change, now you've announced you're making change, albeit, not a particularly major change. And that's where voters go, you don't have any conviction, mate. You don't believe in anything.
Or even a more telling criticism that you didn't get it right.
Yeah.
You didn't get it right the first time around.
Mm.
So that goes to efficiency as well.
Yeah.
Their justification for that is, look, pre-budget, there's a limited amount of people that you can draw into the process because I like to keep these things secret. Well, maybe you don't need to. Maybe you do need to have the debate and get it right before you make the announcement so that you then don't have to go through this painful process afterwards of making changes. Interesting, though, it shows you that maybe the impact on small businesses was exaggerated to an extent, because they've made all of these changes. They've gone from $2 million to $10 million, and yet the loss in revenue is not great.
Mm.
It's $8 million overall, but the loss in revenue is about $500 million or something, maybe even less than that. So it's not a great hit to the revenue, but it does at least satisfy some of the complainants. Mm.
I still think the biggest problem Albanese's got is this perception that he's a liar. I can't think of any prime minister that's got away with it. And I think he felt that with a weakened opposition, he could do it. Of course, the opposition being the coalition, the official opposition being the coalition, but they have a shadow opposition now. And that's Pauline Hanson, who's more effective. And she ran that ad during State of Origin prime time, which wouldn't have been cheap, Fire the Liar.
Yeah.
And, she's produced another ad just in this week. That's a 2-minute ad. It's obviously for social media. I've got to say that
pretty
is...
pretty slick. Do you think it's Australian made?
No.
I'm not saying Australians can't make great ads,
but
it's pretty slick.
It is one of the better political ads I've seen in Australia. 2 minutes. Theme music tapping into the negative mood sentiment. It looks like a very professional American campaign outfit. Creative agency produced it. It looks like it's been researched of focus groups and quant. It hits all the sort of targets and bullseyes. And it's, again, it's, but it's also just you know, reinforcing this voter prejudice that Anthony Albanese can't be trusted. And trust is the most important commodity for any politician. At the end of the day, prime ministers, it's a character test. And that's what they hung ScoMo on, that he couldn't be trusted. They smashed his integrity. And now you can see his opponents are doing it to Albanese. Tim Wilson was a bit mischievous this week, which I know is hard to believe from Tim Wilson, but he was doing an interview with Mark Butler and he kept on saying, well, you know, you're the next Prime Minister, you're the next Prime Minister. Now, my view is a lot of the Labor hardheads, and Don Farrell is one of the most influential figures in the Labor Party, they lived through the Rudd-Gillard debacle that basically gifted government to Tony Abbott. That's not to take anything away from Tony Abbott's campaign performance, but it was a rare opportunity for with Labor imploding like they would.
Tim Wilson has predicted, hasn't he, that Anthony Albanese will be gone by the end of the year and Mark Butler will be Prime Minister.
Yeah, I can see Albanese's numbers crashing, but I just think those Labor hardheads who lived through the Rudd-Gillard debacle will never, ever allow that to happen.
That's no more valuable a prediction as me saying that he won't be in the next Parliament and Zoe Daniel will beat him at the election. You know, that's it's worthless as a prediction coming from Tim Wilson, when he's talking about an opposition, an opponent in that way. On the NDIS, and I really do think that, again, I mean, this is another back down. The algorithms are not working, right? They're not fair. They're not giving people proper judgments. And again, they're dealing with the most vulnerable of Australians. You'd think that they'd allow humans to make some of these judgments rather than rely on arithmetic, which is limited in how it judges people. I have sympathy for the government on this because I know it was getting out of control and something had to be done. And I've just make the observation that the same media that was going on about NDIS and how it was unaffordable and inefficient, whatever, had the parts of the media now finding the case studies to say how cruel this government is, which is a bit hypocritical. But nevertheless, they've got to get this one right. They've got to get it right. And people with genuine disabilities shouldn't be able to come forward and say, well, why aren't I getting these benefits? It's and now to fall back on the algorithm and say, well, they've got to look again at that. Mm. That's a bad look as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's the program for this week. The podcast was made on the sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri people. It was produced by Daniel Simo and Karishma Luthia.
The executive producer is Hannah Parks.
I'm Barry Cassidy.
And I'm Tony Barry. And this is Back to Back Barry's, a Guardian Australia podcast.
Full Story is supported by EY Parthenon. EY Parthenon is the global strategy consulting practice of EY, working with CEOs, boards, investors, and governments on their most critical decisions. They bring deep sector expertise, an investor mindset, and advanced technology to bring clarity to complex challenges. EY Parthenon helps leaders make better decisions in moments of change, anticipating what's next, finding opportunity in uncertainty, and translating complex shifts into real-world outcomes, turning insight into action. For more insights, go to ey.com/au/Parthenon. EY Parthenon, transformative strategy and transactions. Solutions that work in practice, not just on paper.